How's it going, Pod Goblins? Welcome back to another episode of D20 Tower. My name's Brandon, and I've been writing fantasy and studying improv since I was a kid.
My name's Liam, and I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons since I could walk. And now we are going to walk you through our DMing journeys to share the tips, tricks, and stories we've picked up along the way. We want all your games to be fun and engaging for everyone at the table.
So prep your adventuring gear,
grab your dice,
and roll initiative.
Let's begin. And welcome, welcome. Thanks for joining us back today on D20 Tower.
D20 Tower.
We are going to be talking about what an evil character is, and we're going to define that loosely, and we're going to talk about how to play one successfully in a party and fulfill that fantasy without ruining the fantasy for the rest of your party. We have a special guest in the studio today, Mr. Disembodied Voice. Can you tell us what evil is, or define that for us?
Profound immorality and wickedness, especially when regarded as a supernatural force. The world is stalked by relentless evil.
Wow, I didn't know you were calling up my landlord to join us on this podcast today, but thanks for doing that. That was great. So, Liam, when you think of an evil character, like a great evil character from pop culture, who do you think about?
I think for probably most of us in our age range, that's a pop culture nerd and sci-fi nerd or fantasy nerd. The first one that immediately comes to mind is Jane from Firefly.
Oh, absolutely. He's so great.
He is such a good evil character that doesn't gel all the time with the party, but meshes with them. There's a need that he fills for the party. There's things he's willing to do that they're not, and they need that as well. Like, there's so much about him that is really engaging.
And funny. Like,
he has
a
funny.
Lot of comedic moments because he plays, you know, the dumb fighter type, but... Yeah.
He's kind of the dumb barbarian.
Yeah, dumb barbarian.
And sure. The thing that I think the takeaway from Gene for us, as if you want to play an evil character and learn something from him, is sure, you can take the attitude. He's kind of cocky and pushy. He betrays the party. If you're going to betray the party, I like that he does it in ways that isn't going to ruin the
party's time. It doesn't kill another character.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And sure, some of that is, obviously it's written, so on the table, some of that would be DM fiat. Like, if you led the big bad to your party when they were at a dire situation, that's definitely not the kind of betrayal you want to do.
Sure.
But doing a small betrayal on like a side quest for some extra money, that kind of thing can be really awesome to use.
Yeah.
But I think the thing to take away from it is it's how to be an evil character a little more subtly. Mm-hmm. And how to have it play up in a way that just is hilarious. I would play an evil character taking away from Jane as using the misunderstood backstory that he's got.
Mm-hmm.
Most of his backstory is him doing really awful things to people and everyone else around him thinking that he is a saint because he has helped them. Oh, he dropped a bunch of money off of a plane and like helped a bunch of people. No, he was throwing his partner off so he could get away. Like, there's wonderful moments in his backstory that I think we could all learn from if you're trying to play an evil character.
Because he gets a statue made of himself on that place.
Jamestown.
Yeah, Jamestown. So one of my favorites, forgive me, I love pirates. That's like ranked right up there with dragons and knights. But I think Captain Barbossa of the Black Pearl, is one of my favorite evil characters. If you think like Jack Sparrow, chaotic neutral, he just willy-nilly, he's greedy, he works with the good guys, works for the bad guys. But like Captain Barbossa he has specific goals in mind that he's trying to do. He wants to end this curse with his crew and just get returned to normalcy. He's like, we have all this wealth, let's just like enjoy this, and this is too much.
He just wants to be able to have sex again.
Yeah, that's all. That's all.
Something other than a zombie.
Terrible. But yeah, that would drive a man mad, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who else do you think of?
I didn't at first. It took me a minute, but I realized recently Nebula from the Marvel Cinematic. Yeah, she is an awesome evil character because she's so conflicted, but it's not conflicted over being good or evil. She doesn't mind being evil. She knows nothing else. She was brought up being evil. She's trained to be evil. She was tortured, ripped apart, put back together. She is through and through evil. What she struggles with is how to reach her end goals. And I think that the backstory of being forced to be evil is a good starting point. And maybe you want to play up being redeemed. And I think the idea of take Nebula, who doesn't want to be redeemed. So make your character not want to be redeemed, but the player want the character to be redeemed, and kind of work it in so that they're in these situations where they could be and they're not, but they still keep driving the narrative forward and the party forward. And they're not going to like tear apart the party. Maybe they have a link to the party in some way. Like, you've got a Gamora that you hate, but that's your rival. You need to outdo them because, like, in your tortured past, they were always the one that was propped up as better than you.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that she is just sick in the head in a way that would be beautiful to play at a table. For you, I think that we've been more on the sci-fi kick, and I know that you've got you like doing a lot of sci-fi reading. I think you had a character from that you were discussing earlier.
I really like the Red Rising series by Pierce Brown. He's actually local to Colorado, of all places, but brilliant sci-fi series. But there's this one character that starts out in the original trilogy who is the main character's rival. Cassius Al Bologna, and he is through and through. He feels like a paladin the whole time, but he just has this other step where he's like, also I believe in like enslaving everybody beneath me because I'm at the top of society. He thinks I am the smartest. I have this pure bloodline. He's like an unrivaled swordsman.
When you say pure bloodline, is that like his mother and father or brother and sister pretty much for the last several generations?
This isn't a Jaime Lannister. they divide society up into different tiers, and you have the golds at the top. So it's like it's essentially a racial thing. But he, you know, through and through, he's very moral in his decisions. And it eventually leads to him He's very moral in decisions, and eventually leads to him siding with, you know, the good guys, the usurpers, the rebels. And it's a very fun transition to see him get to that point and effectively betray his family for friendship and for like realizing people are people and the slavery is bad. And it's a really fun transition. But the whole time in this book series, he is just a constant thorn in the main character's side and almost kills him at one point. Yeah, that's who I thought of. Just a fantastic evil character.
I think that is a super valid way to run it. The everyone thinks I'm good, but I'm a terrible person at heart. That is, I think, a common trope, and that's an excellent portrayal of it. Moving away from pop culture, I know that we've both played a few evil characters throughout our time, even just a couple of characters we've gotten to play. The last one I played was, I think, one of my most memorable player characters and has since become one of my most memorable...
I think I know exactly who you're going to say.
But one of my most memorable NPCs.
Yeah.
Jota. So Jota was a creation of mine that I wanted to just make as simple... minded and simple of a character that was super compelling as possible. And I've heard some advice before that if you want your character's name to be remembered, you make it short and you make them say it all the time so they speak in third person.
Which he did.
So Jota did. Jota was a black kobold black dragon sorcerer,
mm-hmm.
who was about a year and a half, 2 years old. Super dumb. Well, not super dumb, super naive. Had a low wisdom, pretty high intelligence, actually. And after backstory stuff, he realized that he wanted to live in the human world because it was a lot nicer, and humans liked money, and he was a dragon. These things melded well, so he started building himself up as a merchant, and his one obsession was money at all times.
Yep.
He would, didn't matter what was going on, he wouldn't necessarily betray the party because he had the understanding of a bigger picture of helping the tall folk that have the big city will get me more money.
Yeah.
But going out and like killing bandits, right up his alley. And he was a lizard person, so he
would also eat the bandits.
Yeah, didn't have the morality of the other folk, and he had a thing about jumping on a dying enemy and eating its face off as they died, just to like make the point to everything else around, and spitting acid all over it to melt it. But he was so driven and kept all of his secrets to himself. I don't think I actually ever revealed a single character backstory trait about him.
I don't think so.
In the campaign I played him in, or in the campaign he was in, he engages with the world but keeps his stuff to himself, and it was just money driven. And I think that we kind of think of that as evil, but his willingness to execute on acquiring money was what made him evil. Sure. He was willing to be the one to torture things and kill things, or just
create abomination animal fusions, the dogtopus.
Yeah, the dogtopus. So he started a zoo where he was just fusing animals together, owlbear style, but a little creepier.
What was that centipede?
I don't even remember offhand.
There's some weird
centipede.
Was it
a centipede that human arms
for legs?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
Oh, yeah, the centipede with human arms.
But Jonah was so fun to interact with because, like, we didn't have to worry about like black market anything. It basically the running gimmick was, tell me what you want to do and I will make you whatever I can that does that thing. And sometimes it was like a very weird way, and it made it like you made very exotic, very unique magic items.
It even made the party start questioning if they were good using those magic items. The smoke snake was the first thing you guys got. You bought a dozen of them, and I would describe it every time. But finally, when Dylan actually joined the party, he was like, wait, do they feel that? Because you would take this snake, squeeze it behind its head, grab it by the tail, and yank it in both directions like a stretchy balloon or something, and you'd throw it on the ground and it would start choking up smoke and move in a random direction determined by a d8.
Yeah, and that was like one of the coolest magical items though, so I didn't really care about the morality. It was just great to use because it never really did what you wanted it to do, but it was fun.
An evil magic merchant that sells you evil magic items, but they're not evil in that they're cursed, they're just like messed up to use.
They just violate, you know, PETA ethics.
That's fun.
Yeah, that was a great evil character.
And now you actually play, I think, a pretty fun evil character in my campaign.
Yeah, so I guess we could argue in both the campaigns I played in, I played evil characters.
Well, you became evil in the last one.
I think that's...
That was through corruption.
That's through magical corruption. So in this campaign, I am playing an Illrigger, which is Matt Colville's class that was released semi-recently. It's sort of like a fallen paladin, a hell knight, if you would. And each of the subclasses, we'll go into these another time.
Wait, the hell knight?
Yeah.
Wait, so we are worshiping devils? This is the satanic panic?
This is exactly what that is.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. So the ladies that showed up to my house when I was a kid and yelled at my dad, they were right on point.
Mm-hmm.
We're just, okay, awesome, cool.
I'm literally consorting with devils every Sunday instead of going to church.
I mean, the amount of salt we need to draw these salt circles, though, is really getting like out of budget at this point.
So if anybody listening has a salt hookup, please let us know. So the Illrigger's fun because, I mean, it's all this, the whole class is based around, assassination, stealth, turning invisible, lying, and deceit. And my character is very congenial, wants to help people, and just kind of keeps all of her private stuff to herself, all the dark stuff to herself, and tries not to let that interfere with any of the other players and their goals. And right now it's been, you know, fairly easy to do that. I haven't needed to betray anybody yet that I know of.
She feels, I would say, more like a politician, and that's uncomfortable, but also a really good place to pull your evil from. You need to have that really good public face to accomplish your goals and to acquire the things you want to acquire. But how you acquire those behind the curtain,
sure,
that's entirely your business and the business of the people that you pay.
And it's more beneficial to the party with them not knowing. You know, now the players are obviously sitting at the table watching me roleplay assassinating the guard captain, but it's not in a way that, like, it doesn't impact their characters.
I mean, it impacts the game, yes, but definitely doesn't negatively impact anyone's characters. And that was a setup. I gave you that name of, well, your backstory stuff gave you the name of that person to kill.
Yeah.
But I made sure that that wasn't like anyone else's backstory character that was going to be important to them. It's not like you're going to find somebody's teacher and have to murder them, because that would just be bad on my part as the DM.
So it sounds like there has to be a lot of communication and cooperation between the evil player, the evil character, the player, and the DM, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you want it to be quality, yes, or you have to have a really good understanding with each other from years of playing already. But if you kind of express how you're evil and the situations you want to be in and how you want to express that fantasy, because really you're playing out a fantasy of being evil,
yeah,
but not being too evil or over the top evil. That's really not
just like not ruining the game day.
Yeah, and if there are games, like whole session, like whole campaigns, where that's appropriate and everyone's evil, and that's definitely not the kind of thing we're talking about in this talk today. We're definitely targeting, if you want to be an evil character in a primarily good setting and group.
Yeah. So one of the things that I gave Liam when I wrote up this character is, in addition to 26 pages of backstory, take notes. Players, that's the bottom, the lowest of what your DM wants. Usually they demand more, but but I actually wrote out a big list that was about 4 pages long, like defining my character's morality, to force myself to think of like how does my character see the world, what do they consider evil a thing and stuff like that. And I really like challenged myself to build this character that had reasons to get along with other people. And I think that's probably the most important thing when writing an evil character, is why do they work with other people?
Yeah. I think that it's easy to define evil as being maybe like a sociopath in like relating it that way. Mm-hmm. But we don't want you to play a sociopath in this game where you're a character that doesn't care about anything. Being evil and caring about something is definitely more compelling to start with, but you need to have something that drives you and keeps you on a line, because chaotic evil is kind of ridiculous, especially in a campaign, that whole murder hobo idea. And murder hoboism can be punished in really easy, world explainable ways.
Very much.
Like other people have power and will just come after you.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we kind of talked about what is evil and how to do that at the table, and how do you prevent, and like we're going to get into how to prevent causing any problems. But what are some characteristics of a problematic evil player or evil character, or a problematic player trying to play an evil character, that you've seen in your games or in games that you've played in?
Yeah. There's always, we were talking about this earlier, like I have a theory that most parties who start out good take at least a big step towards evil by the end of the campaign, just because they do stuff and they want to get it accomplished by any means necessary.
I think if you have a... if you have most narratives playing out at the table, they're going to find that good is not always the answer and not always possible. So you have to bend your own morality. And if you've got like a deep story table, you are I encourage you as a DM to make your player characters question their morality through storytelling.
It's a lot of fun to see them see the player torn and like, I really want to do the right thing, but man, doing the bad thing, it's either more practical or it makes sense in the moment or whatever. So problematic, evil, I'm going to say evil players. I'm going to call it out like it is. It's just people who want to enact some sort of dark fantasy in a game and just do anything. They want to say, all right, I'm going to be the Joker, but not the Joker from Batman who has like goals and motives, even if they don't necessarily make sense. They just want to be this chaotic evil, set every tavern on fire, murder people, pickpocket the NPC or the other players, and just generally just cause havoc in your world. I feel like these people are there specifically to just ruin the world you spent time developing.
I've got a uncomfortable example of that.
Oh, it's not me, is it? No.
That's definitely Brandon. It is somebody who doesn't play with me anymore. And good dude, we get along as friends, but we just shouldn't play D&D. And that's a lesson you have to learn sometimes. But our D&D friendship started off a little bit antagonistically when I started running a game for him, and he wanted a lot and I wanted to restrict that a little bit. So there was a lot of kind of fighting back and forth about it, and he settled on a divination wizard so he could decide when things happened. And it was
very controlling.
Yeah, and it was definitely in an antagonistic way, or it felt that way, even if it wasn't. And that became... he said he didn't intend to play an evil character, but that was something I should have curbed much sooner than I did, because I straight up just didn't curb it and let that play out. But he played out so much as torturing an entire family and the children and killing both the parents, putting them in a ditch.
I wouldn't even want to role play that with him if I was
and
DM.
This like, was stuff he was like writing up to me and sending me on the side, not stuff we played out at the table. And it led to one of the other players.
I feel like that's just as uncomfortable. It's like, here's my dark fantasy. Yeah. I only want you to know about.
And I should have really curbed that. But that led to actually like him setting back, or his character setting back progress of the entire campaign for some of the other player characters. Like Peter's character had been setting up in a free school for orphans, and that got blown up when this player's character became an interdimensional terrorist and bombed half the city and ran to another dimension. And
I hate it when that happens in my games.
Yeah, it's so frequent. Yeah, right. Yeah. And there is a line you need to not let people cross as a DM, and I don't know. I think the reason I let that happen was I hadn't played in years, and this group met every single week, even sometimes multiple times a week.
That, which is like the DM's fantasy of just having people consistently show up. Yeah, like, that's the biggest thing.
So it was one of those, I'll eat it and let it happen because I just want to play, and this is awesome that we get to keep doing it. But now we play weekly, and we have a wonderful group that doesn't do anything crazy like that.
We do have a great group.
And I think that when you've got evil players, one of the hallmarks of it turning toxic is that control aspect that you mentioned. Them wanting more control over everything that's happening than is appropriate.
Yeah, and I, to a degree, I can understand it because, you know, I wrote a lot of my background, and I don't want to sacrifice that just because I had a crap roll. But yeah, you know, that's another tale for.
That's
another
the
day.
Risk of writing 26 pages of backstory,
and that's also like the risk of playing a role playing game that's based off of chance. Like, yeah, you. Odds are skewed in your favor most of the time, but like, as I say, when I roll the dice, like, embrace the chaos, like, whatever happens, happens. I think it was very fitting for my last character, but you just gotta roll with it sometimes.
That's too true.
So how, Liam, how do you, so when you're in your party and you are the evil character, how do you pick your battles with NPCs? Like, which NPCs do you choose to mess with? When do you choose to, like, be evil with the other players? Or when do you concede and just, like, oh, let's do the good thing this time?
I do everything in my power to not go against the party's primary goal, and I try to find ways that are just the dark side of getting that goal. I had a player character whose entire mission was get put in prison, get criminal contacts, and span a criminal network and have a spy criminal network all over these cities so that it could be the backbone of information for the party moving forward.
That's so cool. Yeah.
And he was willing to murder, maim, steal, whatever it took.
Mm-hmm.
But I only ever did that far away from the party, and he was a warlock, so he was super charismatic and would just, like, play the face up and then go and do his thing in the middle of the night and come back and get in bed and presto himself clean, and he'd be great.
All the other players would be like, wow, this is, everything's just working out perfectly for us.
Yeah.
How do we get all this information about the villain?
And he'd be the kind of character that if we had a political rival, he would find a way to get dirt on them and place it. And I built him with this warlock build kind of as an infiltrator for those purposes. He was like an infiltrator fighter that needed no gear. I could talk about that build at some point. I think it's
fun.
That
actually sounds really cool.
You just go Hexblade Warlock. You can summon your weapon to you, and you have mage armor, and you go fighter for the extra, like, Battlemaster fighter for some of the extra, like, damage bonus stuff, and it works out pretty easily.
Yeah. Actually, that makes a lot of sense.
You can sprinkle in some rogue for some stealth specialty.
Liam has an idea, like, 15 ideas for every class out there, and we're gonna dive into some cool third party classes in some later episodes that we're really excited to share about. And my class, the Illrigger, will be one of those. And actually, two classes that Dylan has played before.
Popular ones. The Pugilist is, I think, one of the most popular on the DM's Guild, and I want to play the Pugilist. That thing looks fun.
It seems really fun.
As somebody who has done kickboxing, like amateur fighting, I really would love to get in there and, like, be able to play that up as a fantasy setting. And just the idea of, like, jumping on a lich and just with your fist beating its skull until it stops moving,
that's cool.
That's fun.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So I think one of the things that I like about, and I wrote this in my character's, evil character's background, was that I'm not I don't want to necessarily go against the party, but I will always propose the evil option so that they know. And it's not necessarily evil. I play a Yuan Ti, so I'm a snake person, and I see things differently.
Reptile person,
yeah,
again.
I, you know, people are meat, and everything's there to be manipulated or ruled over in one way or another. And but I will propose that idea, but if the party decides they want to do something else, that's fine, because you know what, these people are helping me get stronger, and so I win either way, really.
So with Cassia, or maybe in general, how would you go about carrying out or getting her specific goals to fruition without, like, I mentioned before, like, how I would do it, but how does Cassia go about making her goals come to fruition without actually messing with the party?
So a lot of what Cassia has done so far has only helped the party. I'm, you know, digging for dirt on the rivals, but I think having the moral flexibility to do anything, just anything, the means to the end is always worth it. So I can break the rules and I don't care, because I don't believe in those rules, but I will pretend like those rules are important to other people. And I think that, you know, because they obviously don't mean walking in a tavern just stabbing everybody willy-nilly, but just do stuff behind the scenes. Like you said, you know, you break the bartender's fingers at home as opposed to doing it in front of the party, and you get the information and you're still evil, but it doesn't impact them as much.
Or you take the guard captain out on a late night date and then you dump his body in the lake.
Yep, and it just makes for a really interesting story.
Or you take a walk with somebody, since you're UNT that can turn into a giant constrictor snake, you turn into a snake and eat them.
Yep.
And then I wonder, if you eat them and you turn back, we'll have to talk about the ramifications of that.
Now I have a bag of devouring I can use.
Yep.
Which will be very interesting.
The level 4 bag of devouring is going to be an interesting plot device in this campaign.
Be careful. We had a player lose an arm to it.
Yeah, one of 4.
Yeah, one of 4. We have General Grievous in our party.
Well, he's like Lieutenant Grievous at the moment without the one arm.
So, I think that's... So, just like you said, like, I had a kind of a side quest. I play this assassin character, and I had a target. And I took that person away from the party, and I dealt with that thing. But that's when the players were able to see more of the evil side. I have a contract to fulfill, and I need to do that. But I don't want to, you know, hurt your guys' feelings.
Very true.
Yeah.
So I think that for everybody out there listening that's playing, one of the useful things that we could do for everybody is go over some of the personality traits, bonds, and flaws and ideals from the Player's Handbook background section and go through some that are not in the evil section and figure out how they can be applied.
Yeah.
So something that we can do, I think, to really help is get into the actual specifics of those bonds, ideals, flaws, and traits.
Sure.
And kind of look at some of that are in the Player's Handbook and take a look at how you can use the Player's Handbook to drive your own evil character fantasy if you don't have those ideas in your head already, and how you don't have to necessarily use those ones marked as evil. We're going to look at some of those ones marked as good or neutral or lawful, or whatever, things like that, where it's not necessarily straight up evil, but how we can look at it and have an evil character have that belief set. So we're going to start off with the Acolyte, the first one in the book. Brandon, you want to take it away?
Yeah, so one of the ideals for the Acolyte is change. We must bring about the change the gods are constantly working in the world, and that's labeled as chaotic. That could be argued as lawful, good, or evil. This is a perfect ideal for religious zealots. I must bring about this one niche, you know, scripture, this one verse, this one interpretation, and I must bring this to fruition, and then we have Tiamat or something like that.
So I think next we have the charlatan. And the charlatan is... We chose aspiration for this, where it's, I'm determined to make something of myself. That is, I think, kind of something we can classically look at throughout culture and see that it's really easy to make something of yourself if you're stepping on the people around you and using them to build you up and kind of putting them down in the process.
Sure.
And that's an easy way to twist that, where you're really willing to do whatever it takes to make a name for yourself. You're willing to betray your allies. You're willing to let them take the blame for things. You're willing to skirt the law. And you can go about doing that in minorly antagonistic ways to the party, or just like focusing on the major story beats that you've got.
So the criminal obviously seems like it leans evil. I think you can do criminal in 100 different ways, but one of the traits that ideals that stood out to me was people. I am loyal to my friends, not to any ideals, and anyone else can take a trip down the river Styx for all I care. So here you have a mob family who only cares about the family, or a thieves guild, or a cult, or a city state, an entire country that won't help anybody, and they anybody else can just go to heck.
I love the idea of taking the mob family into that and running it as a mob family. That is a...
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it is a really easy way to take that, but like really evocative, especially if you're talking about running like a city game.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of fun. And
where you have influence in like different areas and stuff.
It gives you a lot of ties. Yeah.
Like, I gotta save my brother. He did shoot a guy, but...
So next we have the entertainer. And we chose the chaotic one for this, creativity. The world is in need of new ideas and bold action.
So how is that? How can you twist that to be evil?
Well, I mean, that's the biggest pop culture reference of the last 5-10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Thanos.
Thanos. Talk to me about Thanos.
He felt like the universe was moving in one direction forward at this rate of expansion, and he felt like his muse, his vision for the universe, which was remove all of the excess people so that everyone else has resources, and went far and above out of his way to execute on that goal. Now, you could go small with it, but he went literally as big as possible. Sure. With the whole universe, supposedly, or multiverse, supposedly. And that's just like, he's not an entertainer, but that's your like draw for your immediate pull. So if we're looking at it from like a D&D perspective, look at what's going on in the setting that your character wants to change, and how can they twist it in this extreme way where their vision is more important than any loss along the way or any cost along the way.
It could just be like rebellion, you know, rebel without a cause. It's just, I'm sticking it to the man, regardless of whether the man has good intentions or bad, you know, something like that.
So what do we have next?
So next we have the folk hero, which at first I was like, how do you make the folk hero the bad guy? And we decided to focus on the ideal of fairness. No one should get preferential treatment before the law, and nobody is above the law.
My brain just immediately took off with all the ways you could twist that in a dark sense, especially with somebody who's seen as the hero locally. Yeah.
And you mentioned Batman. Like, you break the law, you are going to get beat up by Batman.
Look at all the TikTok memes. At least it's like, oh, you jaywalk and Batman's right behind you.
Yeah. It's like, where do you draw the line?
Yeah. And you can go really extreme with it. I mean, don't be picking on your DM and going after petty stuff, because that's just a waste of time. But you can really play that up. Yeah.
So one of the next ones we had was for the guild artisan for community. Liam, what are your ideas on that?
Well, it states that this is first off lawful, and it is the duty of all civilized people to strengthen the bonds of community and the security of civilizations.
Okay. Twist that for me.
What civilization? What community? Yours? Okay, so every time you exit the walls, if your idea is security and everything else is a threat, you could have the character that goes out with the group, and maybe afterwards, like, they have settled a treaty and they go back in and set fire to a goblin camp or something. Maybe these goblins are like, we're not going to bother anyone on the roads anymore. We need like wheat from your people, and we'll leave you alone. Mm-hmm. And we'll trade you something we have. And then this character goes, no, this threat can come back, so I'm going to go ahead and massacre these people and move on with my time.
We're gonna solve the immediate problem
and permanent problem.
Yeah. There will be no more problems if there are opponents.
What's up next?
So we have the hermit, and for the hermit, I chose logic. Emotions must not cloud our sense of what is right or true, or our logical thinking. And I feel like as humans, we are creatures of emotion, and trying to be super logical is how you get Dr. Manhattan out from the Watch.
That's a great example.
Yeah, so he decided nuking New York City to move the entire world towards peace was the means to an end that was necessary. He's like, we have to kill millions of people, and then there will be peace. And there, like, I feel like in a lot of D&D games, you have to make choices like that where there's no good decision. In The Witcher, you know, they always talk about the lesser of two evils, and Geralt very clearly says if I have to choose between the lesser of two evils, those are two evils, and I would rather not choose any
walks
away.
And the first episode of the TV show, he explains that the girl that the wizard is looking for so that he can end her life because he sees her as an abomination because of that wizard's goals, Geralt tells him to his face that he's as much of an abomination as the girl.
As she is, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think The Witcher really does highlight a lot of moral ambiguity and gray area, which is a lot of fun of that series. What else have we got? How many backgrounds do we have left?
So next up we have Noble. We've got a couple more left. It won't take too long. We're going to look at one side of respect with the Noble, and we're going to look at another side of respect a little later on. This is, respect is due to me because of my position, but all people, regardless of station, deserve to be treated with dignity. This one's, I think, super easy to twist. Treat me.
This was wild to me. This is labeled as a good ideal.
I think it's because they press the second sentence of everyone deserves dignity.
Yeah.
But dignity is self-defined. So your character can look at dignity as, I haven't killed you, so that's treating you with dignity. Because that would be treating someone with dignity in Minzo Baranzan in the drow culture originally created. I'm sure they're going to retcon though. But like letting something live and just not abusing it is highly respectful in their culture. So you can play that up of you're above everything. So what is dignity? Looking down on you, glancing at you. Right. And then you have to treat me with respect. And if you're not treating me with respect, that's off the table. Like, you treat me with respect or you are a lesser creature.
Yeah. Like, there's a reason I'm in this station.
So I think next up is the Outlander, right?
Yeah. So we have, this one's a lot of fun, the greater good. And I feel like I touched
on this. The greater good.
Yeah. I feel like I touched on this, laterally with the other one about Dr. Manhattan, but you have so the ideal says it is each person's responsibility to make the most happiness for the whole tribe. So the idea of, for the greater good, you kill New York to save the world, but this one's a little more specific, to create the most happiness for the whole tribe. You're a people pleaser.
And I gotta say, there is such a beautiful comedic example of the extreme of this in the movie Hot Fuzz.
Okay.
Where a British cop goes to a small town and it is the idyllic, perfect countryside British town. And he starts uncovering that things are weird and people will go missing. And when horrific, what appears to be murders happen, everyone just writes it off as some strange accident and they move on. And you find out through the course of the movie, sorry for spoilers, that the elders of this community are just massacring anyone that goes against their specific rules and their specific idea of what is happy. This one actually, I think, speaks to me the most. This one's hilarious. Yeah.
That's what's fun about a lot of these, just twisting them a little bit.
Yeah.
What else we got, Liam?
So up next is the Sage. And for the Sage, we have Knowledge. Again, I think this one's easy, but it's labeled as neutral. The path to power and self-improvement is through knowledge. I'm not going to name drop anybody because they were all monsters, but look at the medical research horrors that happened during World War II.
Yeah.
That was a pursuit of knowledge with no respect for life at all. And it was just brutal, intense scientific experimentation with seemingly no outcome for a lot of it.
Just humans were lab rats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's really easy to play that up, especially if you're talking about a sage. Like, maybe you're locked in a tower and you've been pulling people apart and you're like the apprentice of a wizard who has bodies brought to them for anatomical studies, and you've been peeling people apart and you're a wizard with this background and you're just not right because you look at people as objects. Motes of knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
To pull apart, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you've got the next two. So take it away.
So for the sailor, we have freedom. And I know I already talked about Captain Barbossa earlier, and I think this is a great example of it. So the ideal says the sea is freedom, the freedom to go anywhere and do anything. And I'm sure you're thinking of all of these millennial girls on Instagram with all these travel photos, going anywhere, living their life to the fullest. But then you have pirates and people that just rebel for no reason whatsoever. And that's I think that's a little too easy for the sailor to just kind of, oh yeah, that can obviously be twisted to some evil concept. Next up is the soldier, and Liam and I have different perspectives on this, and I think it's really interesting because neither of us is really wrong. So for the soldier, you have the ideal of live and let live. Ideals aren't worth killing over or going to war for. And this is labeled as neutral alignment. And so I personally believe that if you're a player, you're a powerful character, and you have the ability to stop something wrong, and you don't do that thing, that is an evil action. But Liam, you have a slightly different perspective on that.
I think that we definitely live in a world now where the idea that of apathy being evil is common, but I was raised with the idea that you have the right to be good and make a good impact in the world, and you have the right to be neutral and make a neutral impact in the world. But my father taught me you don't have the right to be evil. So to me, there's a difference there. Being neutral is not evil. But I definitely understand where you're coming from. And if you're like letting your community burn down around you because you don't want to help, I see how you can take that up as a evil trait. But I honestly more see that as, why are you playing this character in my campaign if you're not willing to like do things? If you're just apathetic, you're just not an adventurer. Yeah, I feel like
exactly.
You can be an apathetic adventurer, but that's more like being reluctant. If you just don't care, I have a hard time even, that's just like, you're an NPC.
Yeah.
I have a hard time calling that evil.
Yeah. Yeah. Last up, we have the urchin. So, Liam, you had an idea on this. You talked about respect earlier.
So, yeah, we chose respect for this as well, but we're looking at it from the other side. So it says all people, rich or poor, deserve respect. You can take that to an extreme really easily and look at, what is that level of respect that everybody deserves? I would play this as an extreme of this person, this character feels like they need to tear the system down and get it back to the base level where everyone's equal with nothing, so they have to build back up. And then you could play that up where their whole goal is to just tear down institutions and mm-hmm. things around them.
That sounds almost like very Tyler Durden.
And it would take the right group to play this kind of fantasy. Yeah, that's definitely leaning more on the side of you should talk to your group and your DM about playing out that kind of fantasy before you attempt to just do it, because that one's a little more aggressive.
Yeah, you can get very aggressive with a lot of this stuff, actually. And, you know, just to circle back on what Liam and I talked about earlier is, if you're going to play an evil character, you have to consider who is at your Wednesday nights. Who are you playing with? Who's your DM? What is everybody going to enjoy? And that's that. Yes, you may enjoy playing evil and doing, you know, dark or bad things, but are you making this an enjoyable experience for everyone at the table? Because this is collaborative storytelling. We keep saying that. This is a group game where we all want to have fun and win.
Yeah. And, If you're making your DM uncomfortable with the fantasy you're trying to play out, step back and chill for a minute.
Yeah. 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 It's not hard to see if other people are feeling uncomfortable at your table with the evil stuff. Like, you know, when it's like, all right, maybe torturing this family for no reason is not a good idea.
Yeah, and there can very much be a group like torturing an enemy is fine for the group, and everybody thinks that there's nothing wrong with it, and they move on. And then one player takes a little too far, tortures the wrong thing, and everyone goes, "Hey, we need to like take a step back here. And sometimes not everybody vocalizes that, and it's important that if you're going to be kind of pushing those boundaries, that you're the one watching for everybody's reactions to it. Because if you're pushing a little bit far for what you think is appropriate, but everyone else is uncomfortable, it's a good time to pull it back, even if nobody's saying anything.
Yeah. And, you know, with my character, I like to make sure I'm asking other players, you know, is this extra? Am I being like a little too evil? Like, you got to find a balance.
Absolutely. And I think that it is an evolving experience no matter what you do. That balance is not going to be perfect unless you really sit down and discuss every action and kind of situation with the group in advance. I feel like kind of like Critical Role, they would sit down if they wanted a really evil character in the group and they would like
plan it out.
Yeah, they would plan it out. They even have like evil dark moments with some of their characters, but that is moments. Their characters, I feel like, are typically wholly on the side of good for the most part.
Yeah. And that can make all the difference at the table. It's just a lot of little moments, but you know, overall, you're doing the best thing possible for the world.
Yeah. And I hope that everybody listening has taken some wonderful advice away from this, and you're going to be able to enjoy playing your next evil character well. And I hope that us going over some of the options you have in front of you has hopefully made some of you question if you're evil and perhaps what evil is.
Evil is the profound immorality and wickedness.
Hey. Thank you.
We really don't need you here. You can go.
We got it the first time. Collect your rent somewhere else.
I gotta stop summoning these devils here for our guests.
Probably, yeah. But it's all that salt that we have laying around.
Yeah, if anybody has a salt hookup, please let us know.
Okay, so thanks for joining, everybody. Stay safe out there. Thanks so much for listening. You can find us anywhere podcasts go to adventure.
So like, subscribe, and give us 5 stars on your favorite podcast platform. You can follow us on Twitter at D20 Tower to find out when we're posting new episodes, or toss a coin to these casters on Patreon.
Again, that's at D20 Tower. Until next time, game on, Podgoblins.